don't go to the market with a product and try to find a consumer. Look for a problem and then solve for a solution rather than having a solution and then going to the market. Healthcare, it has been a very, very positive anchor point where technology penetration or access to technology has happened in a very, very significant way. A consumer being discharged 3 days early and then the technology is helping them to monitor rest of the recovery from home significantly reduces the cost for a patient. And in India, healthcare is not only a clinical or a medical problem, it's also a financial problem.
Hello everyone, welcome to yet another episode of The Growth Genius powered by InfiDigit. This is where we share growth stories of business and marketing. I am your host Mehul Asher, Senior Vice President at InfiDigit. In today's episode, we have a growth genius who has been instrumental in creating three successful businesses in a very short span of time. He is a serial entrepreneur who started his journey by keeping the requirements of the consumer in his mind. He was instrumental in founding one of India's first online grocery platform. He also co-founded India's most loved healthcare platform, and now he is a co-founder of yet another healthcare platform which helps patients in their hospitalization requirements. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Mr. Vikas Chauhan. He has been the founder of Fresh & Daily, an online grocery platform. He co-founded Tata 1MG, a healthcare platform, and now he is the co-founder of Hexa Health. Vikas, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to The Growth Genius.
Thank you, Mehul. Happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure to interact with you. I'll just start with some questions which are very basic, I would say. If you can take us through your journey from engineering to you are doing right now, because you also mentioned that you started one of the startups in your hostel dorm.
My entrepreneurial journey started post my engineering. So basically, I am from Ajmer, Rajasthan. Did my engineering in electronics and communications from Rajasthan itself, from Ajmer, and that's there that I learned about the whole Wi-Fi concept. This is back in 2003-04. And Ajmer is a small valley where there are mountains all around. So we thought, why don't we supply internet to the consumers without any wires? And that is, that time broadband has been introduced. Most people were using the dial-up connection. We took a SIFI broadband line, plugged it into one of the relay stations using those antennas, and then the Wi-Fi was provided, but the consumer was not ready to pay 350 rupees a month for a broadband connection. We're talking about 512 kbps kind of a speed, which is negligible today. So very finicky around the price sensitivity, and they were okay with slow speeds. Learned lessons, don't go to the market with a product and try to find a consumer. Look for a problem and then solve for a solution rather than having a solution and then going to the market. Moved to Bangalore, worked in IT industry for a couple of years, then came to Mumbai to do my MBA from Somaya. During that time, one of the challenges that we were facing, I used to stay with my friends over the weekend in Prabhadevi. Sunday trip would be go to the Phoenix Meal, go to Big Bazaar and spend 4 or 5 hours picking the grocery, and then step out, have lunch at Copper Chimney and come back. So you would waste 6-7 hours of Sunday at least once or twice a month doing that. And then Sunday you are at the mercy of Big Bazaar for delivery. So for 2000 rupees and above, they used to do deliveries that time. So you are at their mercy whether they will deliver product next day or not. The products are delivered, so you will breakfast karke jaoge, nahi to waise nikal jaoge. And that was the time when apps were not that common word. E-commerce was starting to gain its footprints. Flipkart was getting recognized. Every other category had some or the other form of e-commerce that is possible. Faced with this challenge, we realized, why can't grocery be delivered at home? So we went to APMC market, which is outside Mumbai, in Navi Mumbai, it's there, and we looked at what is the supply chain of the product that happens. Looked at it, realized there's a big gap in terms of the quality of the product that gets supplied into different tiers, the time duration in which the produce which has hit the market and then to your home, and the whole selection of the product, and not to mention the price that changes. So we realized that there's a huge gap in terms of the standardized branded groceries to be delivered, including fruits and vegetables, and timely accessibility with the convenience of home. So that's where we started freshanddaily.com. The model was simple. You will place the order by 10 p.m. every night and we will deliver it the next day. 4 a.m. I used to go to the mandi, pick up the stuff, get it to the warehouse, pack it, and then we used to do milk runs. So basically start with Wadala and then go to Bhakti Park and then Chembur, Ghatkopar, Pawai, JVLR, and do the delivery. We were unit economics positive from day one. Working capital was supportive, where we were taking cash from the consumer today and paying the vendors later. And the delivery costs were minimal because we were not spoiling consumer for choices. Unlike today, where you give time slots and other thing, we said for each building, there's a 2-hour slot. If you don't pick during that time, we had a nearby shop where you can go and pick your stuff from that shop later if you're not available. So our delivery cost was sub 10 rupees. Working capital was favorable. This was a cost plus model. So every day we got the prices, we would mark up and then sell to the consumer. There was no discount. There was no discount option on the website. So for an e-commerce company, we never had a discount option. Going well, bootstrapped, reached a state. We were around 40-50 lakhs business a month. The business was fueling itself, but it was a wait and watch space from the investment world that time. Was getting married in 3 months already. Delayed it by some time and had to take a call where needed some consistent cash flow. So had some exit planned there, and then got a chance to meet Prashant. Prashant was along with Samir running HealthCard that time, and they were toying with an idea to do something on the clinical side. So I met Prashant and we launched HealthCard Plus. That was to solve the information asymmetry problem that exists in the Indian healthcare ecosystem. Be it any interaction point around medicines, diagnostics, hospitalization, or healthcare in general, the way consumer has been treated is that aapko nahi pata, ab rehne do. And with the advent of mobiles and easy access to information, everybody was accessing information which was half-baked, not giving clear picture or not authentic. So we realized there's a big gap that's there in terms of information asymmetry, accessibility to quality healthcare services, and then the whole broken supply chain which was there. And that's where we built India's first database that could be used to power an app to give information around your medication to the consumer in a real-time basis. That time you had BookMyShow to give you comparison on movies and reviews. You had TripAdvisor to give you reviews in your hotel and all. You had Zomato, which would give you an option to understand the menus and restaurant quality and different ratings. But there was no option to give you understanding on the medicines that you were consuming. It's a high involvement category. It is something that is going in your body and something that's very, very consumer involvement to a higher degree as possible, because it can give you outcomes which are life supporting or life threatening. So we started building that database, and the challenge we found was there was no single source of data available. So we built that entire database. We've defined the format in which the data should be there, collected data from a different source, and launched it. Today it's over 1.3 lakh SKUs listed on the website. It was a web app first product. Because of the inherent social appeal, the app went viral. We had a million downloads without any marketing spends there. And that's where we rebranded the product, rebranded it to 1MG, and scaled it. During the journey, we launched India's first online pharmacy. we launched India's first diagnostic marketplace, built the backend supply chain, multiple other things. In the healthcare, it has been one of the most loved app, most downloaded healthcare app, most highly rated app on the App Store. I think during COVID, it has been our privilege and honor that we were able to serve the country in the time of need. We were at the forefront, enabling easy access to medicine, enabling easy access to RT-PCR testing, and any of the consultation requirement that the consumer might have. Post-COVID, when the Tata partnership engagement was happening, it was a choice whether to be at a 36,000 feet and look at a product to its journey where it is from 100x scale to a 1000x scale, or to go back to a ground and solve a problem which is still not solved. I always been 0 to 1 person, love the chaos which is there in any problem that has not been solved. Healthcare is very close to my heart. And one of the areas where from a personal and a professional experience, I realized had a similar kind of problem was IPD. The whole hospitalization process for a consumer, and highly accentuated during the COVID times.
That's so where IPD is inpatient department.
Inpatient department, basically for any surgical or any requirement where you need to get admitted in a hospital. That's where decided to go back to the ground and start from scratch and solve a problem that has not been solved. And that's where Hexa came in. So almost 2 years back, we started Hexa Health to help consumers understand if there is any surgical or any IPD requirement or any hospitalization requirement that they may have, what all information that they may need in terms of deciding which surgical procedure, in terms if they have challenge in understanding which doctor, which hospital. So we help them discover that. And then once you decided on a hospital, doctor or any procedure, we help you with the entire journey by handholding for different touch points. So for your admission, discharge, post-op care, pre-op preparation, even financing and insurance assistance that we provide to the consumer. So we take care, we become a buddy to a consumer who needs a surgical procedure for any of the clinical outcomes. That has been the journey.
Amazing. Because from your perspective, how has healthcare changed over a period of time? And more importantly, you know, how has been the impact on the costs for the patients?
See, COVID has been a very strong turning point for multiple industries, good and bad. But healthcare, it has been a very, very positive anchor point where technology penetration or access to technology has happened in a very, very significant way. I think the way I see it, there were solutions and there were technology which was enabling accessibility, affordability and availability of healthcare services for the consumers in a big way. But the adoption has been a challenge. The adoption has been a challenge both at the consumer side and the provider side. COVID changed that fundamentally. So a lot of doctors, a lot of hospitals who never used an EHR, PHR, electronic health record system, online consultation systems, any of the software that help easy access to consumers to reach out to these services were implemented and easily adopted. A lot of doctors who have not been comfortable taking an online consultation moved.
Yeah.
A lot of consumers who have not tried this system, that trust of trial came and a lot of consumers tried those services. It shifted the ecosystem by multiple levels. It brought in a lot of data and took people who were building those solutions to work on. See, you have a solution and you don't know whether it is working, not working, whether it will work at scale or not work at scale, what are the challenges. It brought in a lot of data to those consumers in terms of what is working, what is not working. It brought in a lot of insights, what is needed by the consumer, what is needed by the provider. And the rapid change to that we are seeing is basis that you realize that there is a ready set of consumers who are now okay to use technology. You identified what are the challenge areas in bringing either a new system, what all you can solve, or what is the challenge in the existing system. both were enabled during this time, and other factors in terms of infrastructure, mobile penetration, easy access to data, supportive policies, everything being there. Now you have a much more fast-paced growth that is happening, which is enabling consumers to have accessibility in a much more easy form or convenient form. So for example, a repeat order for a consumer is a click off button. A diagnostic report analysis is something that a technology is delivering to a certain extent. The next, you can always go to the doctor and get a complete picture, but that first interaction or first interpretation is happening for you. I think the post-op care or post-hospitalization, the whole aspect within the use of technology, you're solving the problem for the limited hospital beds that you are having. I think the geographical issue that your doctors are concentrated in the top cities and the tier 4 or tier 3 and beyond have lesser accessibility to quality doctors, that is also being solved. Cost-wise, it is having a major implication in terms that, you know, one is fundamental pure convenience that has brought in. So there is no way that you can attach a cost element to it. But the whole exercise, for example, a consumer being discharged 3 days early and then the technology is helping them to monitor rest of the recovery from home, significantly reduces the cost for a patient. And in India, healthcare is not only a clinical or a medical problem, it's also a financial problem. Given that a lot of expense that a consumer end up paying or end up bearing is out of pocket. So what happens is, if you look at any of the chronic disease or lifestyle diseases which are there, if you can help patients manage those conditions, you can reduce instances of hospitalization or at least delayed, and that brings a lot of cost saving. For example, a diabetes patient can reverse diabetes or at least control it. The chances of him hitting or her hitting a hospital or reaching a hospital in 2 years or 5 years or 7 years getting delayed by a few years is a significant cost saving for that. Not only that, but it's also the longevity of life and the quality of life that gets improved. So today you have at scale different models that help you in digital therapeutics, as the vertical is called, manage your conditions better. Cancer care, for example, there have been easy access to top doctors that has enabled around that and multiple other things. So I think prevention, not only once you have identified, but also whole idea that you can get a diagnostic test pre-hand and then monitor something getting worse. So pre-diagnosis of disease using preventive diagnostics has also resulted in saving of cost. Multifold and a very long tail impact of this, but very, very significant.
Yeah, that is very interesting what you mentioned about that healthcare is also a financial problem in India and not just a health problem. Taking cue from that, Vikas, I wanted to understand, since Hexa Health also provides financial assistance and provides insurance to patients, what is your outlook as far as the insurance sector is concerned in healthcare?
So, insurance sector, I think, has faced challenge of adoption. In India, we very highly undervalue the quality of life and life value in general. If you ask somebody to take an insurance plan, they always mix it with a saving plan, and the result is mujhe to kuch nahi hoga aur zarurat hi kya hai. And then because you have cash limitation, the access to quality care gets limited because of the limited options. So insurance has its own challenges in terms of one, adoption from the consumer, and two, the penetration of technology in the whole servicing cycle of the insurance. So there not been much data insight that we have been to get in terms of patients who have gone through. So what are their different analysis and view that you can get to design your products better. I think the other challenge has been how do you bring all the hospitals and all the service providers in which are servicing insurance policies for the consumers. When I say servicing policies is you bought a policy and now you're using a service and then getting it reimbursed through the insurance. So how do you bring technology in that so that the misuse, abuse of the policy is controlled? And because of the high misuse and abuse, the ability for a insurance company to pilot or bring newer and more innovative products get limited. So one of the things that has happened is IIDA has been very supportive in defining those methods and protocols, therefore through which you can bring in new products and pilot it. Previously, it used to be a lot of conditions that would have limited, but now in the past few years, they've been very supportive in bringing those changes. I think one of those early reflections of those is people shifting to bite-sized insurance. So you have 200 rupees cover for mobile cover. You have a 200 rupees, 300 rupees cover for an accident insurance for the next 3 months because you bought a cycle. You have a 200, 300 rupees cover because dengue chikungunya is common in Delhi after rain. So you have an insurance cover for those. So those bite-sized product pushing and enabling it has really picked up.
That's interesting. So, I mean, these bite-sized products, sorry, I wanted to understand, does Hexa Health also provide these kind of covers, the bite-sized covers you're talking about?
We're not selling insurance products. We just servicing any consumer who need hospitalization access. Right. So one that I mentioned is the whole new innovation side that the insurance is coming. Second is all servicing getting shifted to digital. So for example, previously your car would get an accident, then you would need certain verifications or whatever. Today, just by a video call or AI analysis, that claims get auto processed. And the same is happening in health, where now with pre-auth, the disbursement can it be eased? Can you reduce that 8 hour, 6 hour window of discharge? So all those work being done, we will see results in coming time. I think the other shift that has happened is the consumer has changed the medium, so as the insurance company has changed the medium. So I agree there is still over a large percentage of offline and agent network works, but the digital side or the digital products available where you can access to the available options and choose a policy for you, that has become much more easier. So GoDigit or any of these new age insurance companies, Echo or whatever, they are making that accessibility easy for the company. There has been growth, but still a very far from an ideal state for a country and the size of consumers that we have. I think on the government side also, you see a lot of effort that has been happening. Abha, for example, helping you have your digital health records. Ayushman Bharat enabling access to a larger population. So overall, insurance sector is seeing consumer getting educated, consumer getting access, consumer playing a part in it. In coming time, technology and the awareness should lead to a very strong growth in the segment.
Right. I think there's a lot of ground to cover as far as insurance is concerned, looking at the depth and the size of the country that we have, right? That's interesting. Because one thing you mentioned about was that there was, you know, easy adaptability of technology during COVID. So obviously we saw a surge as far as the adoption was concerned. And also, you know, if you look at customer acquisition was more easy at that time because that was the only option. Coming to 1MG, when you have an online platform, you know, to start with, how do you, you know, get the consumer to shop at 1MG and not go to his, you know, neighborhood pharmacy?
I wish I could ring fence everyone that you bought from 1MG and now you will not go to any other platform or any other shop. The world doesn't work that easy. But see, what happens is healthcare is a very trust-driven category. Unlike any other category, in healthcare, trust is one of the biggest factors that drives consumers repeat purchase. So you can get first interaction by multiple other things, but eventually trust is what helps consumers stick to you. So making sure the consumer sticks with you, there is a series of event goes right from the moment the consumer lands on your website to your purchase and then post-purchase. So for example, the look and feel of the product, the minor UI UX elements that you mentioned to bring the trust and familiarity for the consumer to place an order, the ease and convenience of placing the order, how easy or difficult the checkout process, any affiliations or whatever that you have that bring trust of the consumer. So those are two factors. One is any known agency or association that you get affiliated with defines and gives you a stamp of trust that the processes at this organization are true. Data integrity and security. And second is consumer reviews. So you need to consistently do well so that you get consumer reviews. So all those are softer and aesthetic factors that contribute to consumer building trust. Then you have the tire hitting the road where once the order has been placed, you make sure that you have a good fill rate, you have authentic medicines, you only charge what has been promised to the consumer, you deliver on time, you have a nice packaging, and if there's a cold chain or a cool chain product, those are maintained and delivered in those fashion. And then post-delivery servicing. So all those factors contribute to it, doing it right first time, doing it right every time, and continuing to doing it is what gets you there.
That's interesting. I think you have been talking about customer centricity right from fresh and daily days, right? Because that is something which has been the focus. And even when you spoke about your experiment in Ajmer, I think that was a revelation where you realized that you put the customer first and then you put the technology, not the other way around. So were there any learnings with Fresh and Daily which actually helped you to build 1MG stronger?
So of multiple learnings that we had at first Fresh and Daily, one of the things that worked most was being transparent and being upfront with the consumer. I think in healthcare, if you give a consumer 10 options and let the consumer decide that which is the option or whatever available options are there and give to the consumer and let the consumer decide what he or she wants, that works best versus telling a consumer that this is the option. It may be the best option, it may be the best price option, but the consumer will think that you have a cut or you have a underlying benefit that you will draw. What we learned and what we implemented in all our products and services is all the options are open to consumer. Let consumer choose what they want. So in that regard, for example, the diagnostic service that we launched, we told consumer that to decide a diagnostic test that you want to take, there are three information points that you need. One is, what is the lab? Who is the lab? What are the accreditation it has? What is the scale and other things, technical capabilities and other things that they have? Two, what are the pricing of a test between one lab, two lab and three lab? And third point, what are the reviews about these labs from the consumer? And decide whichever lab that you want to go to. We never said that we'll get you the best CBC test at the best quality and the lowest price or X price or Y price. Because what happens is that trust doesn't get built that way. Most of the time, consumer chose above average pricing and lab for that matter. But the assumption that it needs to be cheapest, the assumption that the best price work, there is no concept on that. When you are playing on trust, once the brand and trust are there, the price doesn't matter. The consumer will go for whichever the brand or service that they would trust. So being open and transparent helped us achieve that. I think adding to your previous question there, that what made consumers stick to us and not go to others is, again, one of those factors is being open, transparent and building the trust with the consumer.
That is something which the brand stands for, and that is what even the consumer appreciates in the end, right? So now coming from tech background, or rather working in health tech, what is your opinion on AI? How is it going to change the healthcare industry?
See, AI as a theoretical concept and AI as an execution or implementation subject are vast areas. I think we've not been able to reach to the complete definition of theoretical AI as such. Even the AI is developing as we speak. But the early use cases of that, that being big data analysis and using those models to help service any channel, any aspect of our day-to-day life is what we are seeing. The real capabilities started to come out with those new chat GPTs and generative AIs and other things that we are looking at. So that's what AI is enabling. I think the other side which has been there for some time is that healthcare need to be much more customized and much more personalized for a consumer. So you as a consumer is very different from I as a consumer versus third person. it depends on a lot of factors in terms of my lifestyle. Even 5 diabetic patient at the age of 35 having 80 kgs of weight will differ significantly in terms of what they would need, basis where geographical location they are, the nature of job they do, the nature of food they eat, and multiple other factors. Now, to deliver that kind of customized and personalized healthcare, you need a much stronger health engine that can deliver. AI is that direction, that answer that helps you reach to that level. So I believe AI will help your personal coach, your personal health assistants to help better lifestyle goal for yourself. So that's where I think the end game is. I think there is a journey in between that we will cover. So it has its own spectrum to it. So one is where it can be your basic pill reminder, your health assistant to give you a basic understanding of any test or whatever diagnostic that you've done, multiple other factors. From an industry perspective, this will be an X factor that will unlock a lot of operational efficiency, a lot of significant manpower dependency, which is there in a lot of post-op care, pre-op or patient assistance that is there, and the overall running of healthcare business in general. For example, the generative AI is going to play a significant role where if you look previously, you would need a doctor to write an article, the article gets published, somebody has to review it. Today, articles are being written by AI and the doctor can just review it for the technicalities of it or factual aspects to it. A lot of grunt work or basic skeleton is done through the generative AI. So what it has enabled is one, churn out content at a very faster rate. Now, so previously, if you had 100 doctors writing 100 articles, now you can push out 1,000 articles. And what next level that it brings is if you are a diabetic patient, 85, with a lifestyle which is XYZ, then there is an article for you versus somebody has a lifestyle ABC and there is an article for you. The ultimate way forward around this is if you are a diabetic patient, there is a certain lifestyle and you have a diabetic foot condition. So everything next that you would need in terms of ordering medicine, in terms of ordering a supplement, in terms of reading an article gets aligned to that aspect. You don't get everything in general. And that's where AI will play a significant role. So at a consumer level, if you see, it will be much more at a personal coach delivering you personalized and customized information and a partner or assistant for you. At an industry or ecosystem level, it will help you bring a lot of efficiency. It will help you bring a lot of reduction in manual errors or whatever that can lead to harmful patient outcome. And multiple other aspects that you can keep looking. For example, medical devices. The whole analysis of a radiology or whatever that can be completely automated. And AI is going to play a significant role in it. It can also, early signs around that, the early detection of certain life-threatening diseases and all becomes much more easier with the use of technology, and AI will play a significant role there. So multiple aspects, consumer level, industry level, and innovation. I can talk about this subject, one of the most interesting and something that I personally look forward to. But I think it's still a long way from where we are for the actual outcomes to feel. Because as I said, in theory, we have a lot of things and the whole concept is still getting frame. What we have, yes, is using big data and putting in models in place to test some of these things. The challenge where I feel we are lacking is we don't have enough data to fuel these systems, and that's where will be the limiting factor for it.
Yeah, that's interesting view, starting from the consumer to taking a view of the whole ecosystem, the healthcare ecosystem. So yeah, I think just like any new technological advancement, it has a lot of promise and it depends a lot on the adoption as well, I would say. So, Vikas, I would like to ask you a broad-based question, which is basically on the Indian economy. Now, as you would also know that India is poised or said to be poised in achieving the 5 trillion mark What are your views on that? And what, according to you, will be the levers in helping India achieve this milestone?
I think 5-6 trillion is a big number. And if you ask me, will there be one or two or three factors that can enable it? It's not. It's a culmination of lot of factors. If you ask me, bucketed, then it's always infrastructure, policy, and resources. So there is an easy answer. There is a difficult answer. But I'll tell you my view over it. I was listening to one of the speeches from some global economic forum where they mentioned that a large bracket of our population will be between 25 to 45 in 2027. And each of that individual will have a spending capability of some $1,000 or something. Now you multiply that by that large population base, the outcome that you get is a phenomenal number. Now, how do you reach or how do you enable that? So one is, yes, you are positioned and poised and all the timing that can be there is there. So there is a big infrastructure push that is happening. So be it digital infrastructure or physical infrastructure. So you have highways, you have hospitals, you have institutions that getting created. Second is your push around the digital side. You have policy framework to enable data security and aspect. You have at one end world's largest biometric system put in place, where easy accessibility of data and mobile penetration which is happening. So all those factors are there. Second is stable government and forward-looking machinery. What I feel is there is a general enthusiasm and excitement around an Indian today. I talk to a lot of people, I get a chance to meet a lot of folks, and I'm not talking about metros, I'm talking about the smaller cities as well. I come from Ajmer, and everybody is looking at that, you know, I want to grow, and they are ready to put forward that hard work, they are ready to put forward that effort which is required. See, there is one aspect that government can bring in multiple schemes and multiple policies and nobody adopts, so nobody works on it or nobody benefits from it. The other is people trying to get benefit and they are ready to put across what is needed. So the whole entrepreneur or startup side that has come, I think one is the pure vanity or media story around it. The second part is the whole internalization of doing something, and technology being an enabler for that. For example, the ONDC platform that we talk about. The e-commerce has been just 4-7% of the total business which has been there. Now can ONDC fundamentally change where you bring another 20-30% of consumers on the platform? Now that's a huge game changer. So one, right from the consumer being ready to accept, adapt and work towards the whole conducive environment which is available for them to take up that growth. The other aspect is whole infrastructure in place to do it. Coming specifically to healthcare, I think there is a big push in make in India, consume in India or export to the world as well. I think in pharma, we have been always strong. Medical devices and infrastructure equipments, we've been not that strong. We're still importing a lot, be it the hospital beds, be it the diabetes meters or whatever, and large array of products in that segment. There is a big push which is happening that is enabling that production itself in India, and that's going to fuel a lot in healthcare. Second is the quality of healthcare systems that are available to us. I think the quality and the size of hospitals that are growing, we are one of the largest hubs for medical tourism, but it has come as a focus area for government as well, where they are enabling a structured way to partner with countries to enable medical tourism. Now that would be a big leap and big push for the healthcare ecosystem in the country. Now those are 2-3 big areas where I feel where healthcare will be contributing to the 5-6 trillion dream that we are looking for in the next few years.
Very interesting. So how did 1MG happen? If you can tell us more about, you know, how 1MG happened and, you know, what was it like, you know, meeting the Tatas and if you can, you know, give us some details of it.
So I think 1MG happened, and the Tata partnership are two very different events. As I mentioned, Prashant,
specifically about the Tata partnership, you know, you talked about how you built 1MG, you know, with the co-founders, and then, you know, you talked about the learnings. I just wanted to understand the next step where, you know, you had Tata also showing interest in 1MG. So tell us something more about that.
So I think we were at a significant scale. COVID helped us, you know, reduce our marketing spends and reach our larger mass, given there was no other option available. For us, it was a stage set where we have to look at a multifold jump to take it to every corner of the country. I think the trust, the command of the brand that Tata's enjoy in the industry, I think there's no other brand that comes even close to bringing that, you know, trust factor. If you look at the association of the brand and the whole trust, and, you know, ispe sab sahi hoga wala feeling. Now, as I mentioned, in healthcare, one of the things that a consumer looks at is trust, and that's where the longevity happens. So it was a natural partnership that, you know, brand like Tata can really, really put that stamp of trust that this is a genuine service, this is a quality service, and this is a service that can be trusted by every Indian. So that's where that natural partnership or natural inclement was there. And we always been focused on two things. One, be transparent and upfront with the consumer. And two, never compromise on quality. I think those were the brand ethos that we built, and we kept building on that over the years. And it resonated whenever the partnership discussion happened that, you know, what would it take if we build a product or a service or associate a brand for a larger scale, larger mass or country in general. That has been the journey, or that has been the partnership.
That showed a lot of alignment, because when you talked about customer centricity, you talked a lot about building trust and being transparent, and that is clearly resonating with the brand value of the Tata Group also. Probably is, you know, a natural culmination of you know, getting into a partnership. Interesting. Because another thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, are there any specific growth stories? You know, you talked about, you know, how COVID shaped the whole healthcare industry, and, you know, it also had an impact on how you were running your business. Anything in specific, be it, you know, from Fresh and Daily, or be it from Hexa Health, you know, any specific growth stories which you would like to share, you know?
Multiple, I think, if you start a decade over journey, there is has to be stories which are... So there are two things which happens. Either you'll put a lot of effort and you are very reasonably sure of the outcomes, and then there are stories where the outcome itself surprises you in terms of the effort that goes in. So I think one is, obviously I talked about the data, how being true, transparent, and bringing that trust factor, we didn't take a shortcut where ki जो भी मिल रहा है डेटा पब्लिश करते हैं फिर देखेंगे. वी वर्कड ऑन इट फॉर मंथ्स टू डिफाइन द फॉर्मेट. वी वर्कड ऑन इट मंथ्स टू गेट अ सिग्निफिकेंट साइज ऑफ द डेटा, एंड देन ओनली वी रीच आउट टू द कंज्यूमर. सो अर्जेंसी दैट, यू नो, व्हाई वी आर नॉट लॉन्चिंग, व्हाई वी आर डिलेइंग इट वर्सेज, यू नो, लेट्स गेट द फर्स्ट प्रोडक्ट आउट एंड लेट्स मेंटेन द क्वालिटी ऑफ द ब्रांड स्टैंडर्ड दैट वी वॉन्ट टू डिफाइन आवर सेल्स विद. So that has helped. It happened that the app went viral and a million download happened without a significant marketing push. Another aspect happened with diagnostics, where we were doing online pharmacy. A lot of consumers were coming on the platform for medicine information, and then we wanted to launch diagnostics. So one fine day we decided that, you know, let's build that service, because a lot of prescriptions would have a diagnostic test and the consumer was in need. And our approach was that for any healthcare requirement, the consumer should come to us. So we had one product manager, one business person, and two operations person. 4-person team locked in a room, and the product was launched in flat 7 days. We launched it with only 2 labs, and then we scaled it. then we realize the consumer has a problem that, you know, the options are not available. As I mentioned, that we found that there are three aspects that a consumer need to decide on a lab. So we quickly went out and, you know, brought in all the labs that were possible there that time to partner and gave all the options to the consumer to choose from. Once that happened, the operational challenge we faced was there was no control on the supply chain. So a lab would take an order, and suppose they have confirmed that 8:30 a sample collection will happen, by 9:30 we would have no clue what would have happened. I think the real impact happened when we realized that that's a core service and we need to own it. And that's where we first invested in lab for sure, and then acquired it, and we built India's one of the largest phlebotomy service. So phlebotomist is a person who comes to your home to collect your blood sample. And that's where the whole game shifted, where we were able to control the entire process, bring a delight in the whole process to the consumer. And that's where the real unlocking happened for that vertical. It was again very difficult to build those services, maintain quality standard, bring the timeliness. But again, one of those aspects that you needed to do, because without that, it would be a shortcut or something which is not long term. So around diagnostics, and again, everything has to be that way only. Otherwise, wo service fail nahi hota.
So somewhere you thought, you know, owning up a piece of that value chain actually helped you grow at a much larger scale.
So basically, it's about figuring out what is the real pain point of a consumer. So discovery was one, serviceability was second. So imagine a consumer who is diabetic and is fasting for 12 hours because he wants to get a test done. And at 8 a.m. the test is scheduled, and till 9 a.m. he hasn't a clue what has happened. The frustration of the consumer is understandable. But if you can bring predictability in it, where 99% times you are saying that our sample collection will happen at 8 a.m., it brings that peace of mind. And if you can do it for consumer multiple times, the trust and the stickiness of the consumer comes. So that was one unsolved piece of the problem, which was not standardized, or it was a challenge for the industry or a pain point for a consumer that we were able to solve.
So, I mean, this again brings me to the same point that you mentioned earlier, was that, you know, you have always put the customer's requirement as your North Star, you know.
It has to be. There is
no other way. Is like, right.
There is no other way.
Wonderful. Because you have been successful in building three businesses ground up, and you shared your insights in this episode of The Growth Genius. I would request you to share some key takeaways for budding entrepreneurs over here.
So everything boils down to execution. So if there is one word for an entrepreneur, it's execution. There are multiple interpretation and manifestations of this aspect, but the sooner somebody learns that, eventually it boils down to execution. That's where the real entrepreneurship journey starts. Most of the people come and ask me that, you know, we have an idea, but we can't share. We are afraid that somebody will copy or somebody has copied. Just doesn't matter. At the end of the day, if you can execute it better, it's what that matters. There has been multiple book sites, there have been multiple grocery sites, there have been multiple pharmacies, there has been multiple ABC. Every business had multiple players. It never been that one person, unless you have a patented technology or whatever, and that also will get copied. So the difference comes between a successful business versus other is their capability to execute. How fast you can execute certain things, at what cost. It's not that you have abundant resources. So keeping a cost in check, being realistic about what you want to achieve, and then going about it. So execution is the single most important thing for me over the last decade. I think second is team. You need to be very clear that you want to be a good captain, or you want to be a captain of a good team. For me, captain of a good team always scores high. It is your team that goes and wins that customer for you. It is your team who goes and delivers that order for you. It is your team. Eventually, you can guide the team, you can inspire the team, but a good team is what it takes to build a successful business. So team is something which is very, very, very important that you should figure. You will rely on those people, you will rely on those. That's your real capital. Three, data. In God we trust, for everything else get data. Never run after vanity matrix, never run after matrix which misleads. Don't get excited about something which is not relevant. You should understand what is the real matrix that will make an impact. And if you're tracking more than three metrics to do that, then there is something wrong. You have not understood. If you understand your business, if you understand a certain vertical, if you understand a certain function, there are three to four, for me it's always been two to three core metrics that you need to get to. Everything else is dependent on that. You need to figure that out, and that should be your, don't fall into trap of vanity matrix. Somebody would like this, isko wo achha lagta hai, ye bahut achha ho raha hai. If it is not bringing the real impact that you would want, crush it that day. Don't wait for another day. And don't ignore the data. But don't bring your emotions when you looking at data. Be very, very objective to it. Bring context, but don't bring emotion.
Very well said. That last line was very insightful. Vikas, anything you would like to add apart from this in terms of, you know, any specific pointers you would like to add in the interview? Feel free to pass that message.
I think one of the things that lately I've been thinking around, and I was asked this in one of the HR conferences, that how do entrepreneurs or people who are committed to their work manage work-life balance? Does it make sense that you shouldn't have family, single persons do better? Does it takes a toll on your family life? How do you achieve work-life balance? I believe the whole term work-life balance is misinterpreted. See, as humans, we have a tendency to minimize our risk and maximize our benefit. So, for example, if I tell you that, let's start with work-life balance itself, okay? What you tend to do is, your interpretation is, I should have more time home and less time at office. It's not that, what is needed at each side. You always look at, can I minimize my time at office and maximize my time at home? It's not that. It's about identifying what each needs. So, for example, if you have a kid and the kid needs that 6 to 7 or 7 to 9 time of yours where they would want to play, or you want to help with the studies, or you want to put them to bed, that's what you figure out. You don't have to say that, I'll cut down the working hours or I'll increase my home hours. You can very well manage some part of the work post 9 p.m. also. And I've done that where I've spent my family time, and after 10:30 p.m. I've given time to my other aspects that need to be attended to. It is the smaller time consuming things that you often ignore and eat away your time is there you have to be mindful of. So you have to be mindful of, for me it's not work-life balance, it is balancing your life. It's just that. If you want to spend 4 hours on Netflix or social media or chit-chatting with friends or gossiping post-office hours, and then you're saying, I don't have time for my family or whatever, it's your choice. It's not something else. So that has been something that I've been telling everyone or whoever asked me this question, and that has come multiple times. It's all about balancing your life, and balancing your life means what you want to do with it. You have 24 hours, and that's the single most precious resource you have. Rest, everything is a deliverable out of it. Use that judiciously. You want to sleep, sleep. You want to spend gymming, gym. You want to spend with family, do that. You want to work, work. But don't make one excuse for the other. Then you are lying yourself. One of the things that I've lately picked up is, again, crossing 40, not sleeping. I was not doing justice to myself. So I have moved to a 7-hour sleeping cycle. All the other aspects have improved. I have much more calmer mind to address things. I generally a short-tempered person, but I've been able to overcome it to a certain degree. Still working on it, but that sleep cycle has helped, and multiple other things. Generally, it's a very philosophical topic, but It's all about how you look at it. The moment you look at it from the perspective that, you know, maximize one and minimize the other, it doesn't work. You need to know that what is the optimal for each of it, and put yourself and life in center, and then everything other is a part of it. There are multiple interpretations for person to person, but do keep in mind, it's not about just about burning midnight oil and then saying because I'm working 16 hours, or you have to work 16 or 18 hours a day to make it successful. At times it will be 24 hours also, but you need to figure it out for yourself.
That's very insightful, Vikas. As I said, you know, I think that was a good decision from my side. I left the stage open for you to, you know, give whatever you would like to share. So, yeah, that's about it from our side, Vikas. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Lovely talking to you, and thank you so much for having me.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the end of yet another episode of The Growth Genius. Vikas Chauhan embodies the spirit of young India, which is raring to go out there and make an indelible mark in whichever space of work they are operating in. This is the future of India, and it is a privilege for me to have interviewed him on The Growth Genius, powered by InfiDigit. For more such growth stories, follow us on the handle InfiDigit on various social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. You can also listen to this content on various audio streaming platforms like Spotify, Amazon, and Apple. The link to all of these is mentioned in the descriptor below. So till the next episode of The Growth Genius, enjoy growth stories in business and marketing, and keep subscribing, liking, and sharing. Thank you.